on Manage Your Money God's Way. Since this is the Thanksgiving holiday weekend and the official start of the Christmas buying season, we have two great topics to discuss: contentment and getting out of debt. Contentment, easy word to say, difficult to execute. We're here to help. And then solutions to not only get you out of debt, but during this holiday season, we want to make sure you don't go deeper into debt. That's Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry, Saturday morning at 9 Eastern and Sunday evenings at 5 Eastern on Breadbox Media. And welcome to Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic, where our vision is to help you not only get out of debt, but live a debt-free life. Go to CompassCatholic.org. Take a look at one of our Bible studies pertaining to your finances called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. Over 2,500 verses in the Bible deals with money. Again, the Bible study is called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. In the studio are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministry, John and Evelyn Bean, and this Thanksgiving weekend, the official start of the Christmas buying season, and we thought what a perfect topic to start today's show. One simple word, hard to execute, it's called contentment.
The most important thing that you can do that's going to help you accomplish your goals. And we can name that tune in just 9 letters.
Be content.
Be content. Be content. Did you know that contentment is mentioned in the Bible 7 times, and 6 times it has to do with money? Contentment is in pretty much short supply, almost non-existent in our country and our culture, because the advertising industry tries to create all this discontentment in our lives.
You know, a color TV isn't enough. It's got to be a flat screen. And a flat screen isn't enough. It's got to be one of those new curved screens.
And don't forget HD.
HD and the 4K. Surround sound.
4K. They got something that's even more than 4K now, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's 4 doors and you drive it around the living room.
Well, look at the car ads. I mean, the car ads don't even talk about the car.
No.
They're not.
It's all the whistles and bells.
Yeah, it's not touting safe, reliable transportation that's easy to maintain. It's all about impressing your friends and neighbors and being the first to have this and all these gigaws and bells and whistles. Everything tries to create discontent within us.
I've never had a car with a gee-jaw on it.
Your cars were gee-jaws. Some of the ones we had.
So, unless your family's had a major medical situation or you suffered through some sort of natural disaster.
Or maybe even a job loss.
You know, why do you think that you have so much debt?
And I would say the answer for most people is because they're discontent.
Yeah.
And they use debt to buy things they don't need and things that will never really satisfy them. Maybe it's something like a car, like we talked about earlier, or the new gadgets, or the big, huge 80-inch TV or whatever they're making now.
Yeah. Or, you know, every 6 months there's a new smartphone that comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff, a 5-letter word. S-T-U-F-F.
The ultimate gotta have stuff, and you know who I'm going to be talking about. They just bought fire alarms that when you do the math, each smoke alarm, okay, you know, like you have in your house,
mm-hmm.
was just a tad bit higher than $500 a piece.
Why? What does it do? I mean, does it get off the wall and shake you and get you out of bed or what?
The same thing that at the big box store that you can get for $74.95. It's the new smoke alarms. It detects fire and smoke a lot quicker. And Consumer Reports do rate it higher, but I don't want to turn this into a fire show. But
and does it have a hose attached to it that it squirts on the fire?
When he told me what he paid, I'm like, I hope to God you got a car with that.
And I know who you're talking about, and they're a good example of always buying stuff so that they can be happy or keep up with the neighbors or have the latest and greatest in front of everybody else. And
well, I told him, I said, I can guarantee you that no one will have what you just bought.
Because nobody's going to pay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, stuff is going to make you happy.
Maybe for a little bit.
for about 90 minutes.
Well, and there's a difference between happiness and joy, and that's a fine line. Happiness is temporary. Joy is a deep, abiding presence and feeling of the presence of God. And those are two really different things. And we need to concentrate more on joy and less on happiness.
Listen to this. This is JB's wisdom, number one.
The world according to John Bean.
Yeah. Rule 101. If you're not content with what you have, you're never going to be content with what you want.
Or what you get. So
Evelyn's,
do it again.
Evelyn's addendum.
Again. Repeat JB 101 again.
If you're not content with what you have, you'll never be content with what you want. Is that deep, Steve, or what?
Mm-hmm.
Can we just sit here and do a for a while? Today we live in a consumer society that operates on the assumptions that more is always better, and happiness is based on acquiring more stuff. And guess what?
That's not true.
It doesn't happen. Those people who are really, I mean, filthy, wealthy, rich, the ones that make 10 or 20 times what you and I make. But, you know, those people who make so much money, they're not happy either.
You know what? And oftentimes they're in worse financial shape than somebody that's making less money
because
they waste more.
Yeah, they waste more, and they're doing it all with, you know, they have this mindset that they're leveraging other people's money.
Through debt.
Yeah, what that means is they just got a huge amount of debt.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Paul, when he was in his prison cell, wrote a letter to the Philippians. And in the fourth chapter, verses 11 through 13, he said this: I have learned to be content in whatever my circumstances. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
So this is St. Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament, and he had to learn to be content.
Paul had to learn the secret of being content. And I think we all have to do that too. It's not an instinct that we're born with. We must learn it. And as you start your new beginning, you better start on your attitude of contentment.
So what do we need to do to be content? I mean, how do we teach ourselves to be content?
The foundation of contentment is realizing that the Lord has given us exactly what He knows is best for us at this particular moment.
And He loves us completely, and that amount that He's given us, whether it's a little bit or a lot, we need to learn to be content with that.
Absolutely. And I would suggest that you go to your Bible, you look up Philippians 4, 11 through 13, and you copy that down on a 3x5 card and put it right next to the other card that you've got on the refrigerator and your mirror and every place else. You have to learn to be content.
Yeah, that's a great verse to meditate on. It just kind of boils down the whole gospel message into one little cute little paragraph.
So what's the secret to contentment?
First of all, it's knowing what God wants us to do in handling our money and possessions, and then being faithful to doing it.
And then once I've done everything I can do, I should be content.
And that means understanding that we don't necessarily need to have what everybody else has. We shouldn't be getting into debt. We should be saving to take care of our families. We should be wise consumers and generous givers.
Yeah. You know, I know that my loving Heavenly Father is going to provide me with exactly what He knows is best. And that contentment is just an inner peace that accepts what God has chosen for our present vocation and our present financial situation. Contentment. Isn't that a great word?
It is, if we actually paid attention to it and lived according to that method.
Yeah, the problem is that most people are not content. So what is the foundation of contentment?
In my mind, it's knowing that God has a role in our finances and we don't have to do it all by ourselves.
Now, this is the thing when you take the class, Navigating Your Finances God's Way, when we talk about God's responsibility. So what are his responsibilities when it comes to my money and possessions?
Well, first of all, it's not your money, it's God's money.
Another lesson that I learned.
And God's part is really basically summed up in 1 Chronicles 29:11-12. Okay. And it says, "Everything in the heavens and earth are yours, O Lord, and this is your kingdom. We adore you as being in control of everything. Riches and honor come from you alone, and you are the ruler of all mankind. Your hand controls power and might, and it is at your discretion that men are made great and given strength."
What a great passage. You know, it tells us that God is the owner of everything that we have, and he is ultimately in control of every circumstance surrounding our lives. The writer of this passage of Chronicles recognized that God was the owner of all that he had. God was in control of each event. Now I want to ask you a question. Do you recognize that God is the owner of everything that you have and that God has ultimate control of every event that affects you? You know, it's easy to say that God owns everything, but do we live our lives knowing that that is true?
So how do you recognize that God owns everything and actually live that out in your life?
John, before you answer that question, can you just give us a couple of minutes, because we have to do a little business first, and I believe this is an excellent question, and this is the first big oh wow moment, the very first time I took the Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way, the idea that God owns everything. How do we know that? And do we live our lives knowing that this is true? You're listening to Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry, and this is Breadbox Media. Manage Your Money God's Way. That's the name of the program. And our ministry is Compass Catholic Ministry, teaching what the Bible tells us are the best ways to handle money. You can find more information on our Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way at CompassCatholic.org. Click on Bible Studies, and that's the first one you'll come to. John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of Compass Catholic, have been discussing contentment today. And before the break, the question out there is, how do you know God owns everything? And do we live our lives knowing that this is true?
Well, I had some trouble with contentment until I realized that God only wants what's best for me. And he's going to give me exactly what is best for me at any point in time, at any given point in time. And he will use every circumstance in my life for my good. And I just had to learn to trust his judgment. It was like when we lost all that money and we were really struggling financially. And he used that for good in our lives. And once I accepted that, then I could be content. And the stuff that I have in my life and what's happening in my life, it's easy to be content with now because I know that.
You know God's provision.
I understand it. I don't know what his provision is going to be, but...
but you know to trust it.
Yes.
That's the first big step, right?
Yes, yes.
So if you felt that if you only had more money, then you'd finally be happy, satisfied, content, that's really a false statement, because nothing is going to make us content, because if we're not content with what we have today, no matter what God gives us, we're still not going to be content with that, because our mindset is we always want the nicer house or the newer car or more money or whatever it is that the next greatest, biggest thing is.
That's correct. But you also have to understand that we're not saying that you should not try to improve yourself. That's not true. You should always be trying to improve yourself.
But improving yourself doesn't necessarily mean more stuff or more money.
Exactly. God gave us the talents that we have, and the ability to learn to do new things. So that's the kind of stuff that we should really be working on to improve.
So when you say improve, be better at what you do or share the gift with others?
All of the above. And the big thing that you missed, Steve, was be grateful for what we do have. Because so many times we're concentrating on the next biggest thing and we don't appreciate all the things we have that other people don't have.
And that's where I think it's important to be grateful. And you can show that by sharing your talents
with
the community, your church, with neighbors.
Yep.
I really love what Hebrews 13:5 says. It says, let your way of life be free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. There's people out there who think if I only had more money or a better job, then I could really be used by God. That's not necessarily true. Let's take a look at two men who lived in Rome over 2,000 years ago. In the Colosseum, everyone would stand in silence waiting for Caesar to arrive at the gladiator fights. When Caesar arrived, he was greeted with a thunderous shout, "Hail Caesar! Hail Caesar!" He had more power, prestige, and money than anyone living at that time. And he was worshipped as though he was a god. In a different part of Rome, another man was in prison, and he was chained to his guards. He invested his time in praying and writing to his friends, and his name was Paul. One man lived in a beautiful palace, the other lived in a dingy cell. One had almost unlimited wealth, the other had almost nothing. One was a center of attention, the other was virtually ignored. One was worshipped as a god, the other worshipped the true and living God. Now, isn't it interesting that 2,000 years later, people around the world recognize which of these two men made the eternally important contribution. And they honor him by naming their children after him, after the prisoner.
Paul. So being used by Christ has nothing to do with high position or great riches. But it does have everything to do with a willingness to allow Christ to use you and to be your Lord and to be content with what the Lord has provided for you at this time.
That's absolutely it. And in true Jeff Foxworthy fashion, I'll offer up the following.
Jeff Foxworthy, from St. Paul to Jeff Foxworthy, okay?
I see the connection.
It's not a big jump here now.
I think Jeff Foxworthy was in prison once. He did write.
If you've ever wished you could keep up with the Joneses, then you just might have a contentment problem.
Oh, this is the takeoff on you just might be a redneck? Okay.
If you've ever caught yourself thinking that God hasn't blessed you with enough stuff, then you just might have a contentment problem. And if you ever thought if you had just a little more money, well, you just might have a contentment problem.
Well, good news is we don't need to listen to either John or Jeff Foxworthy, because the Bible has the answers with how to be satisfied in a materialistic world. And no matter how much or how little you have, you need to learn to be content. You know, we've all seen people like your friends you were talking about earlier, Steve, that just have to have the fancy car and the fancy suits and the big house on the hill. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it can be a dangerous thing spiritually.
Yes, yes. You know, and it talks about that in 1 Timothy in chapter 6. Verse 8 says, if we have food and clothing, we should be content with that. And then verse 9 says, those who want to be rich are falling into temptation and into a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge them into ruin and destruction. You know, we saw that in our own lives years ago. And then verse 10 warns us why wanting to get rich is so harmful when it says, "For the love of money is the root of all evils." Notice it didn't say money. It says, "For the love of money is the root of all evils." And some people, in their desire for it, have strayed from the faith and have pierced themselves with many pains.
So it's not wrong to get rich. In fact, some of the richest people in the world were in the Old Testament. It's okay to get rich if a person gets rich as a byproduct of being a faithful steward, if they've learned and applied God's way of earning and managing money, and if they're using their riches to fund God's kingdom and help the needy.
Here's a question. Either of you can answer it. Is there a relation between contentment and the amount of money that you have?
None whatsoever. The poorest people can be content, and all the money in the world can't make you happy. You know, look at all the wealthy people who are miserable. Nothing in this world can fill the God-shaped hole in your heart.
You know, there's a quote that is sometimes attributed to Blaise Pascal, who was a brilliant scientist, and he said, or he's supposed to have said, "There is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every man, which cannot be filled by any created thing, but only by God, the Creator, made known through Jesus." Isn't that beautiful? I love that.
That is. So as you begin your new beginning this fall, there are three things you can do to be content with God's provision.
To learn to be content.
Okay. First, you've got to learn what God says about handling money. And then, second, you got to practice what God says about handling money. So after you've learned and applied what God tells us, the third thing is that you trust that the Lord is going to provide you with exactly how much He knows that's best for you at that particular given point in time.
You know, just as St. Paul said he had to learn the secret of being content, we aren't born with it. You know, we know a lot of adults that are like toddlers who have the me, 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 mine, mine, mine mindset.
That's the first word they learn. Mine, mine.
And a lot of adults are like that. And it's such a sad thing to see, because apart from knowing Jesus and learning the secret of contentment, there's not much else that's everlasting in life. I mean, all the stuff we have is going to be left behind. So why do we think it's so important?
So how can we learn to be content, to stay content? What are the things that we can do?
One of the first things is to establish a reasonable standard of living. Just because you make more money doesn't mean that you have to expand your lifestyle to spend all that money. So figure out what your standard of living you want by praying about it and thinking about what the Lord would have for you. Okay. The second thing is to establish a habit of giving. You know, giving is sometimes the last thing on people's minds, but getting into a habit of giving is huge and probably the main antidote for discontent. The third thing is to establish an attitude of gratitude. Think of things every day to be grateful for in your life. Even if you're suffering or sick, there's always something you can be grateful for. And the last thing is to learn what God says about handling money and then practice it every day.
If you would like more information how we can help you not only get out of debt, but stay out of debt, check out our Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. It's available to your parish. Just go to compasscatholic.org and take a quick tour of the 9 topics that we discuss. Thank you so much for listening, and we do invite you back again next week for Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry here on Breadbox Media. Welcome back to Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry. We started today's show discussing contentment, the first step to really being serious about getting yourself out of debt. Now, let's turn our attention to actually getting out of debt. So, Evelyn, from your years of experience, what are those steps to getting out of debt?
You know, paying off debt can seem so overwhelming, but it's important to start with three basic principles: praying, seeking godly counsel, and figuring out what you have. And if you start with those three things, then it's possible to start figuring out a way to pay off debt and get out of being a slave.
If I had this huge pile of debt, how can I start paying it off?
Well, just like you had to get a handle on spending, you have to know what your debt is. So the first thing that you've got to do is list all of your debt.
All
of your debt. Past due bills, credit cards, student loans, car loans, loans from relatives. And you have to make sure that your list shows who the lender is, the total amount, the monthly payment, and the interest rate, and when it says on the statement that it's going to be paid off if you just make minimum payments. And then take it to prayer.
Just like the story in 1 Kings with the widow and the oil.
Just like the widow and the oil. And if you have any past due bills, you really want to pay those first, because they're going to totally destroy your credit card if you let them go.
Your credit score?
Yeah, your credit score, that too.
So make sure you're current with everything, and then pay off anything that's past due, and then start tackling the debt.
Then you tackle the credit cards.
Okay, I have several credit cards with several small, medium, large balances. You know, what's the best way for me to prioritize what to pay off first?
Well, you probably have several credit cards with several interest rates too.
Right, right.
And there's a couple different ways to do it. One is to pay off the cards with the highest interest rate first, and one is to pay off the cards with the lowest balance first. And our recommendation is to always start with the cards with the lowest balance.
And the reason we do that is because we want you to have success as quickly as possible. If you get that smallest balance paid off, maybe in the first couple of months, then you're going to feel good about yourself. It's like when you go on a diet and you lose that first 5 pounds. You're like, hallelujah. Well, the same thing is going to happen when you get that first credit card paid off. And then you move to the next smallest one, and then the next smallest one. And while you're doing this, all of your other debts, you're paying the minimum amount on. But on the one that you're focused on at present, you want to put as much money as you can towards that particular debt.
And this assumes that you're using a spending plan and tracking your money, and you know where every penny's going, because otherwise you're not going to be able to find that extra money to put against that smallest credit card and get it paid off. So it's important to always use a spending plan when you're paying off debt.
You know, you get that first card paid off and you've got a sense of accomplishment. And, you know, it's really important to stay positive through this. And that's why we're working on the smallest ones first, because, you know, if you're positive about it, you're encouraged about it, you're going to keep going.
If you see success, it's easier to stay motivated.
Yeah. And so once that smallest bill, that smallest credit card is paid off, take all the money you were spending on that particular card and transfer that to be paying on the next smallest card, along with the minimum amount that you've been paying all along. So now, instead of just paying the minimum amount, you've got the minimum plus the amount that you were spending on that first card. And now you're starting to create a snowball. You know, when you make a snowball, you grab a handful of snow and you pack it up and it's real small. And then you make another one, you get another handful of snow and you add it to it. And it starts out like a golf ball and then a baseball and then a softball and maybe a big grapefruit. And pretty soon, instead of throwing snowballs, you're making a snowman. And so now you got a basketball-sized one and you start rolling. You're going to do the same thing with your credit cards.
You both feel this is the most effective way to get that debt down.
Definitely.
Yeah, we've actually seen it work.
Many times.
Several times. And, you know, let me tell you about one particular family that we dealt with. Their name is the Talmadges. That's not really their name, but so they came to us and they had $122,000 of credit card debt.
That's only credit card debt.
Credit card debt.
Not the mortgage.
You know, they'd had this huge medical issue. They lost one of the incomes. They didn't change their lifestyle at all. They just, they manufactured income through their credit cards. When they sat down with us, they were ready to stop. In fact, they were beyond ready. And so we sat down and we looked at all their expenses and we started keeping track of every single penny, 0.01 cents that they spent. And we looked at some of the other things that they were doing and money that they had. Because they were keeping track of their money and being extremely frugal in their spending plan, over 4 years, they were able to pay off $70,000 of that $122,000. It was really, I mean, they were so excited because every year they were making huge shift changes, you know, in the amount of debt that they had.
Well, the interesting thing was to watch how God blessed them for their faithfulness. I know at one point in time, their lawnmower died. And the husband was out jogging in the neighborhood, and he found somebody selling a lawnmower in a garage sale for like $20 or something to replace the one that died that they couldn't get repaired. So God kept providing them opportunities to remain faithful through being frugal and careful with their money because they were being good stewards.
And the really strange thing about it, God tested them too.
Yes.
Through this four-year period, they had three major health issues that happened to the family, not the same person each time, and one of the teenage daughters wrecked the car. I mean, she didn't wreck it, she got wrecked into. It wasn't her fault, but it totaled the car. And they were still able to keep track of their money, not go further in debt, and continue to pay off debt because they had an emergency fund. They created that emergency fund. And that was a big deal.
Okay, here's the question. So I'm paying off my debt. Now, I don't want you to yell when I ask when I answer to ask you this question.
So you must know the answer. Steve, is this a plant?
No. But as I pay off the debt, can I continue using my credit card? Or does that get tossed away, never to be touched again?
If you are using your credit card and incurring more debt, then you shouldn't be doing it. If you're using your credit card to buy essentials that are getting paid off every month and it's part of your spending plan,
okay,
then you can continue to use your credit card. But it's usually a slippery slope to continue using your credit card.
Yeah. You know, if you try to use your credit cards like we talked about, and we said it's a slippery slope, the first month, the very first month that you don't pay the whole amount of the new charges, it's time for drastic action.
And that is,
well, surgery.
We have three tried and true methods that work. And John, the first one's plastic surgery.
Plastic surgery. It only takes a good pair of scissors and a wastebasket and cut that baby up into small little pieces.
Especially that strip on the back.
Yeah.
That little thingy. What's the thingy called that the card readers read?
The chip?
The chip, yeah. Get rid of the chip.
Get rid of the chip.
And you won't be able to use it anymore.
And then I've got this great recipe that I've tried. You can take the cards, put them on some tin foil, and put them on a cookie sheet, and you put them in the oven at 350 for 15 minutes.
And that stinks up the house, but it gets rid of the stinky credit cards.
Make sure all the doors and windows are open.
Can you use barbecue sauce? Kind of?
You know what's really cool about that method, though? You can hear the fire alarm cheering you on when you do it.
No, seriously. I mean, do you know people that have actually done that?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, I've not thought of that one.
And then the third way is to freeze your credit, which doesn't have to do with going to the credit bureau and freezing your credit. It means putting your credit card in a baggie, sealing that thing up, putting it in a bowl, filling the bowl with water, and then sticking the whole thing in the freezer and letting it freeze nice and solid. So if you're tempted to use the credit card, it's going to take you a while to thaw it out. So
yeah, you like that one the same reason I like that one, because I was chicken. and I can always thaw that baby out and get it if I needed it.
Yeah, but I look at how many hours it will take to thaw, giving you enough time to think, do I really need to make that purchase?
Trust me, it'll only take about 15 or 20 minutes if you're really serious about
Don't
it.
Don't tell people about this.
But as we progressed, you know, through our trials and tribulations, we never, ever, ever, never thawed that baby out.
We had to keep adding water to it because we had a frost-free freezer.
Yeah.
And it kept defrosting the cube around the credit cards.
I mean, in all seriousness, were you tempted?
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, maybe in a passing way, but we never, like, got it out of the freezer and put it in the
like,
hot water.
What was it like to live without a credit card? I mean, it's funny to say that now. It's just like with cell phones. What's it like with, if you don't have a cell phone?
I think by that time we were so concerned about the mess we'd gotten ourselves into and so ready to be out of the mess that we were ready to do anything. I mean, we cut out every discretionary spending. I mean, we didn't even get a 50-cent hot dog when our son was playing ball.
Wow.
You know, we took peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to the ball game with us.
We stopped all subscriptions. That included the newspaper and magazines, at cable TV.
Didn't buy any clothes for a long time.
You know, back then we didn't have cell phones, so we weren't paying that. And we had the cheapest plan we could get for the wall phone.
Didn't go any, or we, I remember we used to have date night, and date night was a walk in the park.
Wow. Can't get more romantic than that, don't you agree? Well, coming up after the break, I want to know, is it really possible to eliminate all debt? And if the answer is yes, tell us how. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we are from Compass Catholic Ministry, teaching what the Bible tells us are the best practices for handling money. Check out our website, compasscatholic.org, to take a tour of the various Bible studies that are available to you and your parish. John and Evelyn, being the co-founders of the ministry, are with me today. And Evelyn, the big question we are asked often, is it possible to eliminate all of our debt?
You know, Steve, the Bible is silent on when we can owe money. In our opinion, the only permissible debt is for a home, a business, or education for a vocation.
If you need to take on debt, it should meet one of these three criteria. The first is the item purchased should be an asset with the ability to appreciate, to grow in value, or to produce income.
So that would be a business or education, or most of the times a home.
The value of the item must exceed the amount you owe against it. So like if your house, and you buy a $100,000 house, and you put down $20,000, then what you owe is $80,000. So the value of the house, $100,000, is greater than the amount you owe, which is $80,000.
So that meets the criteria.
That meets the criteria. And this is the hard one. The debt payment needs to fit into your budget so the payments do not put undue stress on you. That used to be a real complicator until the car companies came out with 84-month loans. So you're paying for the car 3 years after it's old.
You know, where people get into problems on debt is usually overextending themselves on credit cards because it's so easy to walk into a mall or shop online and just whip out that magic number, whip that card out of your purse or pocket or wallet and just buy something that you see that you really, really want. But how many times is that want a need? And too many times we confuse wants and needs. So I think 99.9% of the credit card purchases are probably wants, not needs. And that's a good way to get yourself into trouble.
Okay, so what if I switch to a credit card with low interest rate?
Guess what, Steve? It's still debt. That four-letter ugly word, debt.
I'm going to find a way to use this credit card.
Keep trying. You know, that may not be a bad idea if you could lower your interest rate and get the card paid off faster.
But it's still the balance. As soon as the bill comes in, you're paying the balance. End
That's
of story.
Right. Okay. That's right. And a lot of times people will take out a new credit card with that intention, but then they have more credit available. So they charge up on the new credit card.
And they never, you know, they find out, oh, if I transfer this old credit card balance to the new credit card, it's going to cost me money. It'll cost me 3% or 5%. So they don't do it. And so now, just like Evelyn says, now they've got two sources of credit instead of just one. But it all boils down to wants versus needs. I had the great opportunity on Saturday to go shopping with a 15-year-old. And we were at the flea market. And he said that he just had to have a new knife.
Pocket knife.
I have no idea what he's going to do for this with his pocket knife.
But it was shiny.
I think that we finally convinced him he didn't need it. At least on that particular Saturday, he didn't get it.
With you.
Yeah. Well, the Saturday expired before he was able to get back to the flea market. So I know he didn't get it that Saturday. I wouldn't be surprised the next time I see him that if he doesn't have a new pocket knife. You know, why do you want what you want? The answer of because I want it doesn't work.
It's like circular logic. I want it because I want it.
Yes, yes. So you got to just forget about that stuff. Do you need it? Is it an absolute essential for you to live and breathe over the next 30 days? And if the answer to that is no, then it's a want.
Wants versus needs is very important to learn if you're trying to get out of debt or be a good steward.
Okay, let's fast forward. I've paid off my credit cards. They're done.
Congratulations!
You need to celebrate.
So is this the end?
No. First of all, you have to celebrate. You do something wonderful, like buy a cupcake at the grocery store
but I'm not
share it with your wife.
I'm not going to run up a credit card bill, right?
No, you can pay cash for the cupcake.
So is this the end of paying off the debt?
No, it's the first step in paying off the debt.
Most people still have a car loan to pay off. And what about your house? So what about the mortgage? You know, if you've got a house, you got to worry about the mortgage.
Student loans, store cards.
Yeah, all that other stuff is debt also. And you got to get it all paid off. Then when it's all paid off, the cars, the house, and you've got your retirement funded, then is the time to really celebrate.
Then you can do something really extravagant, like take a trip to Ireland.
Buy two cupcakes, right? Hey, so, when the credit cards are paid off and I'm still paying on the car loan or the mortgage and stuff, do I use cash? Can I go back to the credit card as long as I have it paid at the end of each month?
A credit card is a tool. It's like a shovel. So you have to be careful. If you're digging a hole, then it's not a good thing. If you can't pay off that credit card at the end of the month, of any month, you can't pay it off totally. Once you've already paid it off, you can't use it anymore because it's obvious you don't have control.
With the couples that you've worked with in the past or the individuals and that had a hard time controlling their spending with the credit card, once the debt's paid off, do you stay in touch with them to find out what the habits? Have they changed a habit? Are they now paying the balance off when it comes in?
We see some of them on a frequent basis, and they get it pretty well paid off, and every once in a while we run into somebody who needs a remedial class,
right?
Because they're out buying a bunch of stuff that they really don't need, and they're not getting it paid off.
But you find that during the course of paying off the debt, they're really changing their habit on how they use the credit card
and
how they pay.
Yeah. The people that are serious about it. And if you're serious about it and you really take the time and the energy to pay off the credit cards, it gives you a whole different perspective. So in the future, even if you use credit cards as a convenience, you're going to pay it off because you've learned how to manage it properly. Like we use a credit card for a lot of our day-to-day purchases, like gasoline. You know, our toll payment is on the credit card.
We don't carry a lot of cash around, to be perfectly honest with you. But
the advantage for us is it goes right into the software that manages our budget.
Yeah.
So we can track our spending more carefully.
At the end of every month, the bill gets paid totally in full, usually a couple weeks before the due date. The other thing I think that we need to talk about here as just as an example, and I mentioned it a couple minutes ago, but when most people get their car paid off, What's the first thing they start thinking about?
A new car. I was going to take you back to the car loan. I'm glad you went there. Yep. As soon as that thing's paid off, it's time to look for a new one because it lost the new car smell.
Is this what you guys did?
Nope.
Oh, I thought you had another story.
No.
You know, in the past 20 years, we have purchased, I'm trying to think if we've bought a new car, a brand new car. We did once. We bought a brand new car. And it was just a real quirk of circumstances because we'd already settled on a used car and we'd driven it back to the dealership. We were walking inside and where the salesman told me to park, there was another car just like the one I had, but it was 2 years newer. And I looked at it and I was trying to see what the price was. Just to see what the difference was and how much I was saving because I was buying a used car. And I couldn't see the price. And I asked the guy how much it was. Well, it turned out that the price for that new car sitting there, because this was at the end of the year and they were dying to get rid of cars, was $1,000 more than the used car I was buying. But the used car I was buying had 25,000 miles on it. So when you calculate the price of the mileage, the new car was a better deal. And so we bought the new car, and we got a great deal. And we still kept that car for about 8 or 9 years. And you know, that's what we do with our cars. We keep them for 8 or 9 or 10, 11 years, they're paid off. And if you're keeping them that long, it gives you the opportunity to save, to continue to make the payments if you had to make payments in the get-go. It gives you the opportunity still to make payments to yourself that you can pay cash.
This may have answered in my next question, the impact of driving a debt-free car. So it's that paying yourself each month as if you were making a car payment, that when the time comes, you have money saved for a car.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's talk about the impact of driving a debt-free car for a minute, because if you're 21 years old and you have the average car payment, which is about $375 a month, and you drive a debt-free car until you're 65. So 21 to 65, you're driving debt-free cars because you've saved and paid for it with cash. You're going to have saved...
Wait. I know the answer to this. I just calculated it while you were sitting there talking.
I saw your eyeballs rolling as you were doing the calculations in your head.
And I wanted to make sure that you had a reasonable interest rate on the savings. So over 44 years, $375 a month, at 7% annual interest rate, you will save $1,329,000. That's not a bad retirement start.
That's an excellent retirement start.
Yeah. So that is a good deal.
It's a very good deal. So we don't want you to be a slave to debt. We want you to learn how to be content, to be satisfied with what you have. And remember this little saying, debt is bad. Saving is good, giving is fun, and stuff is meaningless.
Now that is worth repeating. Gee, I feel like a teacher. All right, class, repeat after me. Debt is bad, saving is good, giving is fun, stuff is meaningless. Sure hope you picked up several points today and you're motivated now to start working on reducing and eliminating your debt. Well, we have some great resources on our website that will help you. Go to compasscatholic.org, look under resources, and away you go. Thanks for listening today. Hope you join us again next time for Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.